You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Skakuya,
Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustail. Hello, listeners, and welcome to Dog Eared Radio Book Club. Dog Eared Radio Book Club is a bi-weekly book club coming to you every 2 weeks on CITR 101.9 FM. I am Randy. I am the host of this show. You can always reach out to me at dog-eared bookclubradio@gmail.com. Please send me book ideas if you want to be a guest on the show, your reviews on books that we're going to talk about on the show. You can also find me on Instagram at dog-eared radio book club. I'm always happy to chat about the books we're reading, or again, get any of your recommendations. But without further ado, let us jump into today's episode. So today I am so excited to welcome another special guest found on Instagram, Bookstagram to be more exact. So today I have on the show Sarah of @_thescorpiolibrarian on Instagram. So hello, Sarah, and welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
And how are you on this fine smoky Friday?
Yeah, the air quality is not great, but it's Friday. It's summer. No complaints. How are you?
I am also in the same boat. Yeah, the air quality could be better, but I don't have a ton to complain about, so I won't. So today we are talking about the book Hang the Moon by Alexandria Bellafleur. I was going to look up how to pronounce her last name and then I didn't. So that's on me. But I'm pretty sure that seems right. That feels right.
I think it's that or just Bellafleur, but it really depends on the sort of French accent you put on it.
That's true. Oh, yeah, because I guess if it's anyways, yeah. Well, either way. We're reading, we read Hang the Moon, and we're going to talk about it. So before we jump into the actual book, I wanted to ask you about astrology, because I know you haven't read the other books in this series, but the first book, Written in the Stars, is a sapphic romance novel, and it features Elle, who is one of the side characters in this book, and she is a astrologist, and she falls in love with this person, Darcy, who is Brendan's older sister, who is very much not with astrology. So I want to ask you, are you an astrology person?
Great question. I am to a certain extent, I would say. Okay. I think it's fun. I think if there are tools out there, whether it's the Enneagram, personality types, or astrology, signs that help you know yourself better and reflect on yourself, I think those are all valid, but I wouldn't say I necessarily make all of my decisions based on planets in retrograde.
that's probably a good call. That's probably the safe bet. I am very much a Darcy. I am not an astrology person. I find it so difficult to, like, I guess, like, fathom that, like, stars would, like, impact. But I also think it's, like, partially the hesitancy of, like, if I do start to believe in it, then I would, like, feel like I'm making decisions based on it, and then I would feel weird and bad about making decisions based on it. So it, like, leads to this circle in my brain of, like, no, Randy, you can't, like, buy into that, because if you buy into it, like, a little bit too much, then you'll, like, make the wrong decision, and then it'll be because you know, you fell for the stars. I don't know.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
No, I totally know what you mean. I think it's, for me, it's all in good fun. Like, honestly, I love astrology memes on, like, Instagram. And so even just, you know, learning your different placements for that can be a hoot. Mm-hmm. But I totally know what you mean. It could be a slippery slope to where you end up, you know, not accepting a job offer because the planets are saying, don't do this right now.
Yeah, that's true. I also think it might be my bitterness as a Cancer. I never featured in those, like, so, like, on TikTok or, like, on Instagram, they'll have, like, the whatever, like, what's your something for your sign? Like, very similar to what they do in this book and the first book. And I'm never featured in the list. I always have to find part two or, like, I don't know. Or they just, like, never feature Cancer. I'm like, well, then I don't care because it's not about me.
I totally get that. Yeah, that can be difficult. I will say I forgot about the astrology piece a little bit until I did my reread. But my reread has extra motivated me to make sure I finish this series because I love all these characters.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. It is an absolutely adorable series. The first book is so cute. And I really did go into it hesitant because, again, I'm not an astrology person. So I was like, how am I going to buy like a main character that's so into astrology? And then the book really convinced me. They really convinced me. And then the third book is also very cute. It's a second chance. You know, I love those. I'm a sucker for those.
Love second chance. We are team second chance on this call. It's a controversial trope. A lot of people don't like it, and I love it. I'm also happy to have done this reread because I don't know if there are any mood readers out there who will identify with this, but I meant to read them all. And then after I finished Hang the Moon the first time, which was just earlier this year, I suddenly didn't want to read contemporary romance anymore. Mm. I was like, I must genre switch. So now I can come back to it.
Yeah, that's so true. I am an infamous mood reader. I talk about this. The show is so weird for me to do as a mood reader because even though I really like the book, I'll like push it to the back and I'll like leave it till the last minute to read for no reason other than that like it's not my perfect mood, which leads to a lot of interesting speed reads sometimes for books that should not be read that fast.
I totally get it, whether it's book club commitments or I'm on a couple ARC teams, so the advanced reader copies. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to, you know, post a review on or around release day, which is like sort of part of the agreement you go into. And there have been some interesting 2 a.m. finishes for sure.
That's funny. Yeah, you got to do what you got to do, you know?
It feels good sometimes, like, I love binge reading. I wish I could be normal and read like 100 pages a day, but I read nothing or 400 pages, it seems.
That's so fair. That's very relatable. I feel like I relate to that, and I feel like some of our listeners might relate to that too. Yeah, that's fair. So on the astrology topic, did you find, so in some of the chapters, they have like, what romantic gesture are you according to your sign? Did you find those accurate for you?
Overall, I didn't like have a negative reaction to any. The one that I highlighted was from chapter 20. I just have to find it here in my notes, but it was something like, which debate are you as your sign?
Oh, and yeah.
For Scorpio, it was martinis, gin, or vodka, and I was like, gin. So I would say that one's accurate.
That's funny. That's good. Wow, and that's also interesting, because I feel like most people I know are like, vodka.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
So much more interesting.
Gin is definitely an acquired taste. If people don't like it and stuff, I understand. My mom's parents, so my grandparents, are from England, so it's just like my national beverage.
Mm.
You know?
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, I was a kind of opposite. I didn't like any of them that they had for mine. The one that made me like fume was, I don't remember what chapter it was, but it's like, what romantic gesture are you? And for my sign, it was the Notebook's Dream House. So I very like famously, strongly, passionately hate the Notebook.
Oh my God.
I literally have argued and debated with people about how I don't even think it should be classified as a romance movie because of like so many of the themes that are so harmful. Yeah. And so I, that just like got to me. I was like, absolutely not. Nope. I can't let this slide. I vehemently, I disagree with you and I don't know how you read me so wrong.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny. That's the tricky side with astrology is all the signs have their, let's call them unevolved or worst version stereotypes. And if you're dealing with like I don't know, let's say like a newspaper doing horoscopes. A newspaper. Is it 1997? You know what I'm talking about.
I do. Yeah, I do.
If, you know, it's one of those and it's like not super well researched or not very invested. And this is no shade on the author or the characters in this book or anything, but they tend to lean into those. So like Scorpio is vindictive, hypersexual, and scary, and Cancer is like a crybaby.
Yeah.
Like, those are like the stereotypes. And if you get into it, you know, we all had to pass time during the pandemic. So I had my moments. There's so much more to it, but you know, for little snippets, that's sort of what you're going to get. So I totally feel you. Some of mine, not in this book that I noticed necessarily, but just overall, they're a big eye roll. I'm like, ugh, so typical.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Well, I appreciate you listening to me rant about that because I just read it and I was like, absolutely not. I disagree. but I think that we should move on to talk about this fantastic book. So just a note to listeners, this episode will have spoilers in it because we're going to spoil the whole thing. However, it won't ruin the book. So even if we talk about everything, go read the book if you haven't already read it, because it's incredibly adorable, whether or not you know what's going to happen or not. So if you've listened to the show before, we start off with a segment where I very poorly read the description of the book, and then we discuss whether or not it's accurate. And once again, like always, I have not pre-read this, so it will just be me stumbling through it, a little like Brandon, or Brendan, if you will. Okay, here we go. Brendan Lowell loves love. It's why he created a dating app to help people find their one true pairing, and why he's convinced, quote, the one is out there, even if he hasn't met her yet. Or has he? When his sister's best friend turns up in Seattle unexpectedly, Brendan jumps at the chance to hang out with her. He's crushed on Annie since they were kids, and the stars have finally aligned, putting them in the same city at the same time. Annie booked a spur-of-the-moment trip to Seattle to spend time with friends before moving across the globe. She's not looking for love, especially with her best friend's brother. Annie remembers Brendan as a sweet, dorky kid, except the 6'4" man who shows up at her door is a certified hot nerd, and Annie wants him? Oh, yes. Getting involved would be a terrible idea. Her stay is temporary, and he wants forever. But when Brendan learns Annie has given up on dating, he's determined to prove that romance is real. Taking cues from his favorite rom-coms, Brendan plans to woo her with elaborate dates straight out of a Nora Ephron's playbook. The clock is ticking on Annie's time in Seattle, and Brendan's starting to realize romance isn't just flowers and chocolate, but maybe real love doesn't need to be as perfect as the movies, as long as you think your partner hung the moon. I mean, that description alone is so romantic.
God. So cute. Oh, I was like swooning during that.
So would you say that's pretty accurate?
I think overall it's accurate. I think in the marketing of this book, before I read it, I saw a lot of stuff about him recreating rom-coms. Like that was sort of like snippets shared and things like that. And I know that that's in there, but I don't think that's as big of a part of it as some of the book marketing makes it seem, but it is in there.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that. Like, I also kind of went into it expecting for him to, like, reenact, like, movie moments that, like, would be super recognizable to the reader. And that just, like, doesn't super happen. I think what's more accurate is, like, he attempts to do romantic things or plans romantic things, and then they fail in, like, a very, like, cute, funny way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of agree with you. It's not, I don't think it's as big to the plot as it kind of leads it to believe.
Yeah, it's a good hook, and it's sort of his hook with Annie, even if she doesn't know it initially. So, like, I get it, but I agree. And I don't know if I'm just, like, not the biggest rom-com aficionado, but sometimes until some of them were explained, I was like, I'm guessing this is from a movie. but I don't know which movie this is from.
Yeah, that's fair. I would say I am, like, I have seen a lot of rom-coms, but like I said, like, there wasn't, they talked a lot about rom-coms, and like big gestures in rom-coms, but again, like, I completely get why you wouldn't like make the connection right away that they were part of like a rom-com.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely, I loved all their conversations about like what is romance and stuff like that. So yeah, I would give the summary like a 4.5 out of 5 for accuracy. Yeah.
That's good. I totally agree with your rating. And then overall reaction to the book. So this is just like your very like a 2-sentence review.
This book is so sweet and realistic, but still in a fun romance fantasy way where it's not so realistic you don't want to read it anymore. And yeah, I just think this is a really great depiction of two people falling in love, even if they're hesitant. And I gave it 5 stars.
Nice. Yeah, I would also give this 5 stars because it just made my heart feel, you know, like the same feeling. Like, I mean, if you like dogs, like when you hold a puppy, that's the feeling I had reading this book. Like, just like such a warmth. Yeah, I concur. This book is so adorable. Brendan is the sweetest man who's ever been written. That's like, I'm seriously convinced of that. Like, and I love dark romance as much as the next person. I like a brooding hero, but sometimes you just want a romantic man who drives a smart car. Like,
oh my gosh, I am convinced he would not fit in a smart car. He's supposed to be 6'4".
I know, the whole thing is absolutely hilarious, but yeah, I agree. This book is super cute. Okay, well, since we've already talked a lot about him, let's talk about Brendan, main character. Yes. Of the book. Yeah, I don't know. Give me some of your thoughts. Like, do you think he's like a leading man?
I do think he's a leading man, maybe somewhat reluctantly. Like, I'm not sure he would put himself in that position, but he's very swoony. Like, we can't deny that. Like, I want to say I love the sort of, not flip, but use of best friend's brother, but it's younger brother.
Mm.
I thought that was fun because so often, especially in like dark romance, the trope is older brother.
Yeah, that's true.
So I really liked that. A couple of things about this book, how I knew it was really good. Not to be objective about a subjective thing, but I didn't find him to be too perfect because you can run into that with like these main characters that are just like amazing at everything and know what they're doing. And even though he's the sweetest character, one of the sweetest men I've ever read in a book, it didn't take me out of it ever. Like, he was somehow still believable.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes sense.
Yeah. And then I was just going to say, it is funny. I saw a review that pointed out, like, he is like the opposite of the tech bro that we have come to know sort of in pop culture, but he is like a tech CEO. So I thought that was interesting. And then what I really liked about him is I felt like he was just really honest the whole time.
Yeah.
And I also really liked, and we'll get into this when we talk about Annie a little bit, but I liked that he didn't pretend to still know Annie and like make assumptions about her based on like their previous relationship. He was really trying to get to know her now.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with completely what you said, like how he wasn't overly perfect. So he had this like he was perfectly imperfect, I guess. Because he's sort of like, he, you know, he's a hopeless romantic, but he's not like a delusional hopeless romantic. And after reading this book, like finishing it, I was like reflecting on like, because we have like the quote unquote nice guy trope in like pop culture and a lot of movies and stuff. And I kept thinking of, I don't know if you've ever seen How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought of like Ted Mosby, how he's like a romantic, but he's so toxic. Like he's such a bad person. And so I think for me, again, what really endeared me to Brendan is that he was a hopeless romantic, but he still listened to Annie and he still like absorbed, you know, when she said like, oh, I'm not a person for grand gestures. Like, that's not what I care about. I care about the little things. And then he was like, oh, so he paid attention to the little things and he kind of like switched over and he didn't just focus on like, oh, this is my perception of what love should be. So therefore it's also yours. And it like led to him going down this whole like, you know, exploration of like love languages and like how people communicate their love for one another. And I think that was like, it was such a subtle like growth arc for a character, but I really enjoyed reading it because it wasn't like he had to overcome like this huge, you know, like kind of like toxic personality. And I think that's where I get, like, I agree with what you're saying, how it's like realistic, but it's not like too realistic because I think his growth arc is realistic enough to like relate to and understand.
Yeah. Ted Mosby is such a good, like, comparison. Brendan is definitely not the quote unquote nice guy.
Yeah.
He's just a genuinely good guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. He's like, and I really, one of my favorite things about this book was like reading, and same with the first one, was reading about like his relationship with his sister Darcy.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore reading good sibling relationships in books. I think I've talked about this before. I just think like they're so sweet. And to me, they're just like a sign of like someone who's like healed and like is like has emotional maturity that you have like that good of a relationship with your siblings.
Yeah, 100%. And I always talking to friends with siblings because I'm an only child. So sometimes I'm like, I don't know how siblings are. Does this make sense or whatever? But in this one, it felt like they had history. It felt like they were siblings, but it wasn't over the top, you know, the cliche jokes of like calling each other bro and sis and stuff like that. It was like, this is just how two people who now have an adult relationship talk to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And it felt like they were like, not like the same, like they had both grown and they had grown together and like maintained like a friendship between siblings.
Yeah, 100%. And they're still in each other's lives. And it's just, it's all so cute.
I know. Ugh. Yeah, I love that so much. I am not an only sibling, but I do not have a good relationship with my sibling. So I just like live vicariously through fictional characters that have like good older brothers or younger brothers or just good siblings in general, I would say.
I totally get that. Reading as therapy and catharsis is always welcome.
Exactly. See, yeah, you get it.
Yeah,
but overall I think I like the comparison to Ted Mosby because it does draw out like all of these toxic, and even like in a lot of rom-coms that he does look at, like we still see that trope of like you know, like the nice guy. Even like in The Notebook, like, you know, people think he's like so romantic, but most of the things he does are just like so overtly toxic. And like, I was on an episode with one of my friends at the station, Lena with Jeff. I'm sure some of the listeners recognize me from that show. And he mentioned that The Notebook was one of his favorite romantic. Well, I think he actually called it a rom-com. And I was like, no. And I spent like 5 minutes just on like a tangent rant about how like I hate how people view the Ferris wheel scene as being romantic because I just view it as like straight up manipulation. I just like I can't get behind that as like romantic. So I really genuinely liked how like in this book I did view Brendan as like a true romantic, because again, I think communication is romance. Like that's what romance is built upon, is like friendship and communication, and like you said, like getting to know Annie as an equal, as an adult.
Yeah, 100%. And not forcing her to think the same way that he does, or to think these things are romantic. Like, I really like that conversation, and I think there's room for them both to be correct. Mm-hmm. Like, as they discuss, some people love a grand gesture and like words of affirmation and stuff, and that is perfectly allowable romance. Like, if that's how you feel loved, that's great, but you can't just make someone feel that way.
Yeah, exactly. I think this isn't a book that's like meant to like pit two ideas of romance against each other. It's very much meant to like explore all avenues of romance.
100%.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I am dying to talk about Annie. We're going to take a very quick ad break. And then when we get back, we will dive into our conversation on Annie.
Do you want to change the state of the world, but instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both! Frock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder, because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
Whoa, hold on. Where are you taking all those cacti?
I need to put them near the radio.
How come?
They love to hear Everly's nature-based music on Dead Succulent Haunt every Thursday at 5 p.m. on CITR 101.9.
Oh, Dead Succulent Haunt? Where your plants can grow and you can mourn those you've lost?
Come on, plants, let's grow.
Are you tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
All right. Welcome back. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I am your host, Randy, and you're listening to Dog Ear Radio Book Club. Today, I am joined by Sarah, and we are talking about Hang the Moon by Alexandria Bellefleur, not sure. Anyways, and we are going to dive into a conversation about Annie, the other main character. We just finished talking about Brendan before the break, and now we're going to chat about Annie. So Sarah, I'm going to let you lead off this conversation about Annie.
Sure. I love Annie. She is the star of the show here for me, 100%. And, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about identifying with certain parts of books because of what you've experienced in your life, and reading is therapy. So I think Annie sort of embodying that pre-midlife crisis is just very relatable. In terms of, we have a career woman who really has prioritized work over personal relationships, and it hasn't always been her quote-unquote fault. As we discussed, the first book is about Darcy, who's her best friend. They used to live together in Philadelphia, and now Darcy has moved to Seattle. And Annie sort of debating, or planning, I should say, on moving to England, which would take them further apart. And I, one of the stars of the show for me in this book, like, Brendan and Annie are so adorable. I love the real friendship talks
in this book. Yeah.
Between Annie and Darcy, just talking about growing apart from your friends and being happy for them when they settle down or get in relationships, but then also feeling left out. And then also, as Annie's in Seattle and spending time with Darcy, Annie's sort of internal monologue about what it's like to be part of a group again, because she's felt so left out. I like cried during, I think it was the second game night, one of the game nights. I was like, this is so nice. They're such good friends. And she's a realist and she's pragmatic and she's head over heart to a fault sometimes. And yeah, I just love Annie. You have to tell me what you think.
I concur. I thought she was really awesome. I think that she was such a good balance of a character. So I think all of her parts were very, I think, again, like this book has that sense of like realism to it. Like these characters feel very human. And so I totally saw her, you know, her hesitancy to like, you know, make this big life change, and like, you know, her commitment to her work, and like, yeah, like job security is real. We all need job security. Yeah. and that's so fair. Right. And I think also like her view of love and her view of romance wasn't like overdone. I think sometimes I've read books where like, you know, the grumpy sunshine trope, and like, mm-hmm. if one of them is supposed to be like not a romantic and the other one is a romantic, it's very much like they're very nihilistic about it. And that sometimes can just get annoying, because it's like, okay, yeah. We know you're going to fall in love. Whereas I think Annie's was so much more, again, human, because you could tell she was still open to romance, but she wasn't like as open as Brendan. And I think that's what really, you know, their balance of each other was so nice to read because of that, because it wasn't like one end of the spectrum to the other. It was sort of both in the middle kind of balancing. I really like that. And then also your point about like, you know, when your friend gets in a relationship, like you're so happy, but it's also so hard. I related to that so much. Like one of my closest friends recently started dating a guy. Oh, actually not that recently. and we're already like long distance friends. And so, you know, as happy as you are, like you do recognize like subconsciously, it's like there's less time, right? Because
yeah.
I get it. You want to spend your time with your partner. That's like so valid. So it's something that you just kind of go through as a friend of like recognizing like, okay, well, that just means like, you know, less time. And it's like, and I like how it's like, you know, Darcy's not the villain. Like Annie's not the villain for feeling like that. It's just, that's what happens when you're an adult. Like when you're in your 20s and 30s, like people are making big life changes. They're moving, they're getting new jobs, they're getting relationships. They might have kids. Like all of these things are just changing. And it's like, it's not as easy as when you were a kid and you just went to school with the same person every day and just saw them and was like, oh, I'm your friend now. Friendship takes so much work. That's kind of what I want to say.
100%. And I think your point about neither of them being villains is really important. I will say, like, for me, a really relatable part in there was because, you know, Darcy's the one with all the changes and is so busy, Annie is sort of like, oh, I don't want to be a bother.
Yeah.
And I really liked Darcy sort of stepping up a couple of times and saying, like, you know, I should have initiated more in our friendship. Mm-hmm. And I do recognize that. I just think it's good to see some healthy friendship conversations and prioritizing those relationships, because we do forget. Like, everyone just has so much going on. So I love that. I love a good friendship.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of my all-time favorite like topics to discuss is like how like heteropatriarchy really like forces this idea on us that like your romantic relationship is like the pinnacle of your relationship. So like the goal is to, you know, marry someone, and then that relationship status is like above all others. And it's something I butted heads with people my whole life because I just think that's BS, like flat out. I'm like, no, like your friends and, you know, maybe even people in your family, they stay that important to you. And it's not just because you get a partner that like automatically those relationships are worth less in your life. Like you can find love and care in so many aspects of your life and so many relationships. And so I also really love that. I love that. Yeah. Like Darcy and like Annie have that, like they recognize through this book and like through their conversations that like their love and their care for one another is still such an important aspect of their lives.
Yeah, 100%. I definitely agree with you on sort of the like how we've been trained to prioritize relationships. And I think sort of an interesting thing you see in interconnected standalone series like this one with the continuation of characters is sort of what happens after the happily ever after, quote unquote,
yeah,
because they're still around. And so sometimes in real life, sometimes in books, like people can get very short-sighted because new romance is so exciting. Mm-hmm. And, or maybe for a period of your life, like, yes, your partner is the most important relationship in your life. But as short and sweet as life is, it's also really long. And
yeah,
so in 10 years, you don't want to not have any of those friendships.
Yeah.
Right? Just because things change so much. So I like seeing, you know, Darcy and Elle get their little happily ever after moment. And then it's like, oh, Darcy actually has some things to attend to in the other aspects of her life.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I like how like supportive Elle is of that. And even Elle's flourishing, you know, like the beginning of her friendship with Annie as well was just so great to see. I also really like how this book, you know, another like point check mark for Brendan in my mind is his amount of friendships. Like, you know, he's friends with the people he works with. Like, you know, he grew close and became friends with Margot. And I think that's so important because one thing in real life, that I notice is all of the straight men in my life that you're mostly like older, they put all of that, you know, value into their romantic relationship. And then if something happens, they lose their partner or they get separated, like you're basically left with no friends. Like if you're, mm-hmm, this is a PSA to men, if your only friends are your wife, girlfriends, partners, like partners. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
If they're your only friends in your life, please, please work to get more friends. I know in the movies, it makes it seem like it's such a nice thing when all of our friends are just one big group. No, like you can disperse that love and care throughout different aspects of your life. And I think that's so valuable because, you know, we all need support from different places at different times. And I really like that, how, you know, Brendan, he had his sister, but he also had Margot, and then he had the people he works with. I think it's great. And I wish that men had more friendships because it's great. It's very nice.
I am a sucker for male friendships as well. I totally understand. And yeah, you know, in terms of the realism that's in this book, which is what I think makes it so relatable, is just you can't put everything on one person, right?
Yeah.
And I think this book did a really good job of sort of weaving Annie and Brendan's journey through their conversations with a lot of different people and their experiences with a lot of different people. So it wasn't just like Darcy and her brother and her best friend, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I totally, and like in a lot of books where like it is just like the one best friend. One of my favorite series right now, I can't remember who the author is, but it's called The Divorced Men's Club, I think, or The Divorced Men's something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know which book I'm talking about?
I can like see it. but I don't remember the synopsis or the author.
Yeah, I can't. It's like, it's a really good series. I'm just going to pop out my Kindle real quick. Just look it up. So I'll just keep talking like I normally do. Also, I love on Kindle because I'll like type in something and I'm like, oh, it'll just pop right up. And then you just type in divorce and it's just like manuals on like how to get through divorce. And then you like forget that there's this whole other side to Kindle Unlimited that's not just smut. And you're like, what?
Yeah, it's like nonfiction self-help books.
Yeah. Okay, so the series is called Divorce Men's Club by Saxon James. And it's a gay romance series. And it's basically like this group of men who are divorced. So they got divorced in their life. There's one guy who's a widow, I believe. And it's so it's this big kind of interconnected series. And I love it so much because, first of all, grown men supporting one another, love to see it. And second, I just love how like there's like they're kind of a group, but then within the group, like they each have relationships that like give them different things in their life with each other. So like, you know, they'll go to one friend to talk about something, but then they talk to a different friend about something. And I completely agree, like the way this book does it, that like, it's not just they have one best friend each and they're like the funny sidekick character. They're, you know, they're characters on their own and they, you know, they have these unique relationships with the main characters, Annie and Brendan.
100% I feel like I would cry a lot during that series. I cry about bromance as much as I do romance. I would read a whole just male friendship series.
I know. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I haven't read the, I think it's the Bromance Book Club series. Is that what it's called?
Yes. I surprisingly also have not read it. So I'll put that on the list.
Yeah. Put that in the list. But I do recommend this series so much. It's one of my like top series that I've read this year. I adore it so much. And I also, because I also just love reading romance novels with like older characters. Yes. Sometimes I get tired of like reading about 20-year-olds because I'm like, I'm 20 and I'm not in love. I don't want to read about that.
Yeah. I do have, if you're looking for characters in their 30s, there's an indie author named Aimee Vance. A-I-M-E-E. She has a fantasy romance series about Vikings, which is very fun, and then a paranormal rom-com series that she co-wrote with someone. And in her Instagram bio, it's like, I like my female main characters over 28 or something like that. Like she writes them all like early 30s at least.
That's funny. Yeah, that's good. I will definitely check that out. I love how this just devolved into us giving book recommendations.
Should we talk about the actual romance?
Yes, I think we should. Let's talk about it. I want to start off by saying one of my favorite things about this book, like plot-wise, the relationship-wise, is that like it's not a secret that Annie's moving. That comes out super early in the book. So the central tension isn't that she's holding this secret. That she is going to move. And then we all know that like the drama is going to be when they find out. It exposes that in the beginning. And then we get this like really good like story of these people knowing that she's moving. She knows she's moving, but we still get this like very, you know, romantic and beautiful relationship from that.
I 100% agree. I love that they, the author sort of switch the tension on us there. And as Second Chance fans, maybe we can relate to this a little bit. One of the things I love about Second Chance is like there's immediate tension between the two of them.
Yeah.
But I feel like childhood friend or childhood crush is similar. And I'm not a big Insta love fan. But for some reason, again, why it's a 5-star book for me, maybe it's partially because things that might bother me in other books, like it was just really well written and it worked in this story. But they did have a history and they do fall hard and fast. And what I love is it is sort of that, like, what happens if you do fall in love quickly? Like realistically, like what happens if you have to sort of deal with all these new feelings and how intense it is. And I really thought Annie, sort of career girl, at like mindset. I loved seeing that sort of crumble because I'm not a girl boss. I don't believe it. But I loved seeing her sort of reconcile with that because you can put so much of your identity into the biggest part of your life, which for Annie is her career, and having Brendan sort of come throw that off, it really just felt like that's how it would happen. And the insta-love, insta-lust, whatever, really didn't bother me because he'd always had a crush on her and he was very swoony.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't like a classic, like, oh, I fell for you overnight. It was more like, you know, it was like a kid crush. And then, you know, he's getting to know her as an adult. And he's like, oh, actually, the feelings are still there. Because, you know, on the basis, she's like, you know, you have a lot of characteristics to when you were a teenager, right? Like, at your heart, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. you're the same.
Yeah, and what I actually really liked was the tension and the conflict felt really grounded in their characters. Like, mm-hmm. of course, Brendan, being Mr. Hopeless Romantic, is willing to be like, just move here now. You can stay with me. And of course, Annie is like, I have a lot to think about. And I actually really love that she left. I sobbed. But I love that she left. And the other thing I really like was there was that social media moment where she like sees Brendan post a photo with Jenny, who's actually his coworker, and they're just friends, but Annie doesn't know that.
Yeah.
What I loved about that is it was resolved in like 7 pages.
Yeah.
And then she was like, oh my gosh, what's happening to me? I'm not this type of person. Like, I liked the self call out and the like, yes, even the most maybe rational or head over heart people fall into this trap sometimes, but it wasn't like a 4-chapter Annie's not talking to Brendan because she's mad yeah. about this. It was resolved like instantly.
Yeah. Yeah. This isn't meant, what do they call? There's like a term that they use for books like that where it's like super like a teenage drama, right? Where everything's like super yeah. drawn out and like very dramatic. I can't think of the term. This is not that. This is like adult. And she's like, oh, he moved on. And then Darcy calls her. And then she's like, oh, I'm not, you know, he moved on. It's fine. And then Darcy's like, why are you so like this? And then Annie's like, why am I like this? Yeah, exactly. I agree yeah. with you.
I just think like, yeah, I loved everything about this, the pacing, the tension, Annie's whole internal monologue of like, this is a terrible idea the whole time. But then yeah. she also does start to change her mind, though, which is why I love that she still left.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I was reading it the first time, there's like, oh my gosh, this is another place where I cried. Brendan comes over to wish her a safe flight, because regardless of if she moves to London, she still has to go back home to Philadelphia, right? Yeah. Like, she's only in Seattle for 2 weeks. And he's looking for answers that she can't give him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think initially I was wondering, oh, is she just going to stay or like tell him right now? And I actually liked it wasn't dragging it out, but I liked the extended time to think. And I think she says, I need time and space to think because I can't think when I'm around you.
Yeah.
And I was like, I really get that. Like, if she spends all her time in her Brendan bubble, she's not going to think about the rest of her life.
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely adore that scene. I also thought it was sad. I like got a little choked out, but after I was like, that was such a beautiful scene because I think it was written so well. And the book leading up to that was written well because that scene, again, didn't make either of them the bad guy. It was so clearly communicated that they both felt so differently, but they both respected each other's feelings and that, you know, it wasn't going to be resolved overnight. And, you know, I like that, like, he didn't leave in anger. Like, he didn't leave. Like, at no point was this, like, a breakup. Like, I would not classify this as a third act breakup.
No.
because I think that the whole time, like, there's a commitment, and, like, you know, also I love that he, like, researched possible careers and stuff for her.
Oh my God.
That was, like, so, because I was like, I feel like he should do that, because I'm like, if you're asking her to move, like, she needs a job.
Yeah.
And the way that actually, and Darcy did that too. Darcy's like, oh, I'll help you with that too. So again, like, giving, like, support, like, actual concrete support is, like, I love to see that. It was so good. But yeah, I completely agree. That scene, I think that's, like, a highlight scene for me from the book, because I just really think it showcased the care between them and how, like, they were different, but they were both still sort of on the same page. Maybe on, like, if you open a book, they were, like, opposite pages, but, like, right next to each other.
100%. And what I liked was, I don't know how to say this, I guess. They really avoided miscommunicating with each other, because there is mm-hmm. the part in that scene. So let's say a couple of days before, Brendan gets this phone call from a girl, and it ends up being someone who he canceled a date with to hang out with Annie.
Yeah.
And it sends Annie into the spiral, a little bit of jealousy, but more panicking about making a life-altering decision based on 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because she was like, this is how quickly this stuff can change. And to me, that totally makes sense with Annie's character, given her sort of internal monologue the whole time. And I liked that, you know, in that scene, she took the time to explain it. Even if he didn't agree with her, she took the time to explain it and be like, it's not about another girl. It's about the fact that this is a really big deal for me to move here. And if things can change that quickly, how do I know it's not going to change for us? And I really liked that part. I was just, like, crying the whole time. And then the other thing I really liked too, though, was even though she is back in Seattle and she's going to be with Brendan, I like that she had something else in Seattle too. Like you said, the job research, Darcy is there. Like, it was about finding love and chasing love, but it was also about actually letting yourself be happy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I related that so much. Like, that was, like, a decision, like, went into me, like, moving out of Vancouver and back to Alberta after graduation. Like, I mean, obviously, I unfortunately don't have the love of my life waiting for me in Alberta. But I think that idea of, like, searching for true happiness and, like, the struggle it is to admit to yourself when you were not, like, wholly happy it's so hard and it's so difficult. And so I really like how, like, you know, it took time, because it takes time. It's not, like, something you can just admit overnight.
100%, because I think even though there shouldn't be, there's something embarrassing about it.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, I've worked in a field for 7 years and I don't like it. And it shouldn't be embarrassing at all. If you're listening to this and you're debating chasing your dreams and doing something you love, do it. We support you. But there's just, like, an internal monologue of, like, oh, do I have to start all over? Was this a waste of time? And so, yeah, that part was all super realistic. I just love this book. I have no notes. No notes.
Well, I think we're getting close to the end of our time, but let's talk about some romantic parts. So the one that I automatically think of is after Annie had left Seattle, Brendan is, like, texting her quotes from the French dating show. And then she's, like, translating them, and they turn out to be, like, these ridiculously romantic things. One of the things is, quote, I'd like to build my life with you by my side.
Oh my God.
Okay, hear me out. I'm partially, like, a little bit convinced that he did translate them before, because they were just so perfectly on the nose. But I don't think that detracts from how romantic it is. Because I think it's cute that, number one, he's, like, watching the show without her, where he can't speak French and for some reason there's no subtitles. But I love those moments. Those are, like, one of my favorites.
Those are really cute. And I agree, if he did translate them beforehand, it's still adorable. Yeah, let's see. Romantic moments for me that come to... I mean, the first kiss and the karaoke situation definitely made me, like, kick my feet. I was like, this is adorable. I'm also a really big fan of the embarrassing first date and or early relationship embarrassing. So the whole, like, stuck on a Ferris wheel and having to pee situation. I know it's not romantic, but it's, like, it's part of their history.
Yeah.
I also really like when she buys him that script.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. She starts off saying, like, oh, I just saw it. It's nothing. And he is, like, very adamant of being, like, no, this is thoughtful. This means something to me. And then they get interrupted when they're going to smooch. Oh, so dramatic.
Well, I have to say, you should definitely read Written in the Stars, because that has the embarrassing first date.
Yes.
So you'll love that. I guarantee you'll love it. And I look forward to hearing your thoughts. The one that I'm not sure how I feel about is the breathe right nasal strips. What's your take on that? Is that a sweet romantic gesture, or is it kind of a little bit insulting?
I have decided that for Annie, it's a sweet romantic gesture. Out of context, I'm not sure, but because, you know, she had the whole... My version of romance is someone actually getting to know me and noticing things about me and remembering me in their day-to-day life.
Yeah.
Like, it is a trope. Like, there's a, from Grey's Anatomy, Derek and Meredith also have a breathe right nasal strip situation. And I liked it then, so maybe I'm biased, and I just think, I think it's sort of like, I'm trying to spend more time with you, even asleep.
Yeah.
And so put this on your nose so that you don't wake me up.
I mean, as someone who's such a light sleeper, I relate to that so much. Like, I'm like, cause, and I also thought it was, like, very cute, cause, like, she's never had a partner that close, I guess. So it was kind of like a sign that he's, like, that close and that comfortable with her, that he's willing to, like, broach this kind of uncomfortable topic, right? Like, telling the person you're dating that, like, you snore really bad and it wakes me up, like, but I also want to continue to snuggle with you, so, like, this might help. So yeah, I'm with you. I think in the context of the book, it's sweet, romantic. Out of context, I would punch someone if they did that, for just making that sort of assumption. But I also, no notes on this book. So we are come to the end of the episode. It was so fantastic to talk about this book. I thank you so much for recommending. I love that you, like, pushed me to read it, because I read the first and the third one and, like, skipped the second one. And very similarly, I was like, oh, I'll go back to it. And then I just, like, forgot, you know, because the endless amounts of books out there.
Yeah. No, 100%. I will. Well, now we can be opposite. So I have to read the first and the third, because I found this book based on, like, a very personalized recommendation. So I, like, didn't even know it was in a series when I started. So I'm very excited to read the rest of this universe. I love all the characters.
Perfect. Well, I'm excited for you to read it. But in the meantime, where can our listeners follow you if they want to see more of your content on books?
Yeah, absolutely. I am @_thescorpiolibrarian on Instagram. So I do sometimes silly reels, and then I post some ARC reviews, things like that. So come be friends if you would like to. And thanks for having me on your show.
Well, thank you so much for coming. And thank you to the listeners for listening. And we'll see you all next time.